Up to over here, Mizma Memdal, we finished Mizma Memdal, page 398.
Yes.
398, Mizmar Memdal.
Can you go closer to that?
Okay, Mizmar Memdal, Kilecha Haragnu Kol Hayoim. Nechshavnu Katsoin Tivcha. So this pasuk obviously touches upon a very sensitive topic that unfortunately the Klal Yisrael in Golus has been under attack. Okay, so let's see what it says in the Gemara Chazal, pasuk of Gimel. This is a very famous Chazal that in the Kinois on Tisha B'Av, the Kalir. Okay, the Kalir on Tisha B'Av dwells upon this Mizmar, this Chazal at length. Okay, Mizmar, it's on Pasuk of Gimel again, page 398. Ki olecha haragnu kol hayom nechshavnu ketzon tivcha, for your sake. Ki olecha, for your sake, haragnu, haragnu. It's not hol with the komats. Notice it's a cholam, haragnu. Now this is not the same pasuk that we say in davening. In davening, as someone mentioned yesterday, we say a different pasuk. I think that pasuk. I think there it's with the comma, because it's a different pasuk.
Yeah, usually it's a comma. This is
Inyan
Kofal.
Inyan
Kofal.
It's a different pasuk.
Look above, because you don't
understand. It's a different pasuk. Hatei Elokai Oznecha. Say it tomorrow. Say tomorrow.
Actually, we don't.
Why? Because tomorrow is Rosh Chodesh. Tomorrow is Rosh Chodesh. Right? There's no Tachlin tomorrow. But you said there's no Tachlin tomorrow.
There's
no Tachlin. It's right by Mincha. Wow! Get out of here. Today, early today. It's Mamish Yom Tov today. No Tachlin. It's by Mincha today. Hatei Habeid Mi Shemayim Ureki In Like Kelas Bavim Nachshavni Kitzayim Matevach. Page 398. Okay. Okay, we don't say this pasuk. We say a different pasuk. Okay, Yuval Laharoig Ulabid Lumavul Herponos Nechshavnu Kitzoin Latevach. It's a different pasuk.
That's right.
It's a different pasuk. We mentioned that yesterday. Okay, let's just read what's over here in the Maamar Chazal. Okay, it's on page 398, pasuk Chav Gimel on the bottom of the page. Likute Shas Umidroshe Hatanoim. Ki olecho hoiragnu kol yom nechshavnu kitzoyin tivcha omar v'hudah mashmuel v'item v'ravami v'amid lo samse b'masnis otona mase b'arba me'os yiladim v'yiladis. It says that it was a ma'isa, this is a story that you hear on Tisha B'Av, this is in the Kinois. Kina tes zayin is the kina of Titois, recalling what exactly Titus. The Titus came to the Kodesh HaKadosh, he took out his sword and he stabbed the Paroiches. Good morning. Shalom Aleichem. Good morning. Shalom Aleichem. No, you're not disturbing. It's a covet for us. Watch your step over here. So there's a mice. What was the mice? The mice of Yavosi Lavilolos Shanishvu Lekoloin. There was a mice of 400 young children, boys and girls. They were captured. And they were nishbu, they were taken hostage. For what purpose? Likoloin. Okay? Human trafficking, like they have today. They talk about this a lot in the news. Okay, they talk about this in the news a lot, about human trafficking. And likoloin means for shame. It's worse. What's likoloin? They were going to be used for averos. They were going to be used for terrible averos. That was the goal. That was the agenda of why they were captured. And what happened? So over here, in the Barak, it's the editor.
The Romans, yes.
The Romans, the Bayis Sheni, correct. This is the Churban Bayis Sheni. We mentioned this in Kina Tes Zayin, on Tisha B'Av, the Kina of Titois, of Zuchor Asher Osir Tsar Bifinim. Okay? One of the most popular Kinois on Tisha B'Av. Remember what the Tsar did, Bifinim. Not Bifnim, but Bifinim. They're two Girsois. They're two Girsois of one that word. We discussed that once at great length. Is it Bifnim or Bifinim? They're two Girsois. And it goes on to describe that Titus took out his sword. He came into the Kodesh HaKodashim and he stabbed the Paroiches, and the Paroiches bled. The Paroiches bled, and at the end of that Kina, it mentions this story. And there's a very big question, my Inyan Shmita Eitzel Har Sinai, what does this story of what Titus did in the time of the Bayi, how he defiled the Kodesh HaKodashim, have to do with the story we are about to read right now? The story is, the Romans at the time of the Churban, they collected 400 young boys, young girls, it would seem a total of 800, it would seem 400, they put them on two different ships, one ship of boys, one ship of girls, and they took them, shenishvu likoloin. Koloin literally means shame. What is shame? Shame means an avera. And in the brackets, it tells you, don't make any mistake, what it means, yiladim lemishkav zochur. The boys were taken for mishkav zochur, which is an important point for the conclusion of the medrash, and the yaldois lapilakshim, and the girls for pilakshim. Okay, it means that they were going to be used for averus. Here, gishu bi atzmon lemohen mispakshim. They sensed why they were captured. Amru, they said, im anu toivim bayom anu bavul chayolim haba. So they asked a shayla. They asked a question amongst themselves. If we give up our lives, if we commit suicide, are we permitted in this instance? Here we are. We're being taken as for this these averus. Is if we know there's a halacha that a ma'abed atzmei ladas, a person who willingly gives up his life, he has no portion in olam haba. But this is a unique situation because the alternative to live is to be used as objects of avera by our enemy. So darash l'magol shabhem. So the oldest amongst them said it's permitted. It says in the pasuk Omar Hashem mibosh, and this is later on in Mizmor Samaches. Omar Hashem. Hashem said, "Mi boshon oshiv oshiv mimitzulos yom." The Gemara explains, "What does it mean? Mi boshon oshiv yoshiv esatzadikim afilu mibein shine arye sheterofam." So the boshon means mibein shine. Okay, it's very very weird to get a parish of what this means because I will return from boshon. Boshon means a place. The Gemara, this person in this ship, maybe it was a girl. We do not know. She was a milumedes. We don't know who's the one that made this drasha. Was it a boy or is it a girl? Yes. I mean, yeah, let's see. I don't know. Maybe not.
Unless both of them had someone who could make this drasha,
mm-hmm.
It wouldn't work.
Maybe it was a recording. Maybe it was someone. Maybe it was someone who had a recording of this drash. In other words, someone who went to a shir and they knew the drash. So this is a very important point. The word bashan. Okay, we have to see the pshutishal mikra. I don't know. I do not know what the pshutishal mikra is. But the Hebrew bashan over here means mibain. It's a contraction. The typical drash of Chazal, mibain shine, between teeth. Okay, so bashan is the bain. The bay stands for bain, in between, and shin nun means shinei teeth. Even a person who is being eaten alive, he is being eaten alive, and he is between.
Shan is just a place name.
A name of a place, right? So, but what's the context of that place? That l'chor means they've been dispersed. Hashem, that our enemies have taken us to the far ends of the world.
Means a far away place.
Far away place. It was like today you would say China. Today you would say the North Pole. You would say the space station, Mars, the moon. Okay, you want to say that we're going to send some of our politicians on a one-way ticket to some vacation village and never come back. Don't ever come back. So you say a faraway place. You can have a one-way ticket to Mars. And there's no technology to bring back. We have technology today in the United States. We have technology. If they really want, they can send someone tomorrow to Mars. Mamish, 1, 2, 3, they can get them out there. Problem is, we have no way, there is no technology available today to bring them back. Hashem gave us technology to send people to Mars. They can, Mamish, send the person to Mars. But we don't have the technology to get them back, to bring them back. Gay gesunte hate.
The one-way trip.
One-way trip. So that's the pshutoi shel mikra is boshon, a name of a place. However, Here we're making a drasha, and the word bashan means mibein shinei, between teeth. And you talk about teeth, we have over here a dentist, Dr. Mordechai Bittenstock. And between the teeth of, did you ever do any dental work on animals?
Never.
Never? No politicians ever came to you?
I had a professor who was a dentist in Bronx Zoo. He described how animals which have tusks or teeth break them, and he had to put the animals into general anesthesia and do something.
Yeah, I'm sure they have cavities. Dogs don't get cavities. They don't have a root canal. Really, I'm not joking. I'm sure people who have dogs, they can detect they're in pain.
They extract their canine? What?
Yeah. Dogs don't have everyone here knows what it's like to have pain, tooth pain. It's unbearable. But animals don't suffer from the same problem? Certainly they do.
This Dr. Mordechai was in Vietnam, and he showed me copies of the teeth that he handled with.
Wow.
You know, with the...
You went to Vietnam?
Cases that
you went
cases.
To Vietnam? You were in Vietnam?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
A dentist in Vietnam.
Wow.
So it depends how loosely you use the term.
Okay, so it says here, Mibein Shinei Aryeh Sheterafam. Okay, so it says that Hashem will restore them from. Now, so in other words, the word Bashan, according to Chazal's understanding, is a drasha. It is a code word to refer to the worst possible situation a person can find himself in this world. When you're being chewed alive by an animal, That's pretty serious. An aryeh, a lion, the teeth devours its prey, and Chazal see in the word bashan a contraction of bein shinei. It is a code word for a person finding himself in an impossible situation. And
they could have said something else.
Yeah.
Bashan mileshon busha.
Busha, interesting. Very good.
They were saved from
busha, from Cologne. Very good, very fascinating. Very, very beautiful pshat. The bashan is also miloshan of busha. Bashan, busha, busha. Very, very good. The busha shalom. Yeah, okay.
Whose interpretation was this one here?
So this, obviously, you need to make a drasha like this. You need a mesorah. Obviously, it's like halacha l'moshe m'Sinai. Now you'll say, but do you say such a concept when it comes to Nevi'im, when it comes to Sifrei Nevi'im? I don't know. Obviously, the Gemara quotes this pshat, which is very, very, I don't think any, the average person...
Is this part of the Gittin text, I wonder?
You have to look for Hashem. Oshev, Yoshev, Afilu, it is the part of the text. It's not part of the brackets. Mibein Shinei Aryeh. Between the teeth of a lion. Now the word Aryeh doesn't appear in the Pasuk, and all it says in the Pasuk is Bashan, and we obviously the Gemara is darshing the base is a typical type of drash in the Gemara, Bein Shinei. So it's a metaphor that they people who find themselves in the most difficult situation, it says, Ashiv mimitsulois, Yom, the next words of the Pasuk are from the depths of the sea. So whoever these children were, these very holy children, they obviously had a Mesorah, that this Pasuk means that a person who finds themselves between the teeth of a lion, right now here they are, they're on a boat, they're on a ship, and they're captives, and their captives are vicious, vicious, wicked people who they can certainly identify as the Bein Shinei Aryeh, and what they want to do is they want to jump overboard and drown and die and descend into the depths of the sea. And Hashem says, yes, if you do so, Ashiv, I will restore you. I will resurrect you at the time of Tchiyas HaMeisim. You will have, and if you're being resurrected, if you're going to be zechut to the word Ashiv, that automatically means there's going to be Tchiyas HaMeisim. It's a very important drasha because every single year we come across this on Tisha B'Av. We darshan this. We always come to this drasha and to understand the depth of this drasha. Bashan is Bein Shinei. The next words are Mitzulo Yisyom, which is understood to mean that instead of proceeding and allowing yourself to be caught between the teeth of these wicked people, to be devoured by them, jump into the Mitzulo Yisyom and die, and give up your life, drowned, and don't worry, because Oshiv, Hashem says, I will restore you will merit Olam Haba, Tchiyas HaMeisim. Ashev mitzlos yom elu shetoyvim ayom. To those people who give up their life and go to the mitzudos yom because they don't want to be between the shinei aryeh and be devoured for sin, it's okay to give up your life. Kevon sheshamu yilodois. When the young girls heard, yes, that this is what Hashem is proper, what do they do? Koch, when they heard this drasha, kavsu kulon, they all together, they all jumped overboard, they gave up their lives, v'naflu, they fell with sochayom. The girls went first. Then the boys, who were not, doesn't seem they were so quick to jump overboard, nasu yilodim kal v'chom bi'atzman v'yamu, the boys, they made a kal v'chom amongst themselves, and they said, look, the girls, they will be taken for avera. The avera that they were being taken to do was darko shaloylam. Darko shaloylam, that an isha is this is what a man does to an isha. What they want to do with us is unnatural. It's not a natural thing, mishkav zachar. So the avera is worse. When the avera is something that shaloy kederech, what?
Mishkav
zachar, toiva. It's a toiva, very powerful word. The word Torah does not throw around the word toiva loosely. It's called in the Torah toiva. It doesn't say that Agili Arayis is called a toiva. It's a terrible avera. It's a terrible avera, capital punishment. But it's not unnatural. So they said mo halalu shadarku l'kach koch. They give up their lives. Anu she'en darkenu l'kach alachas kam v'kamba. Af him kofsul sochayim. They give up their lives. V'alei makos of oimer. And upon them, this pasuk says, this is the reason why we're selling this medrash, ki olecha, for your sake, hoiragnu chol hayoim, the entire day. What's the entire day? Okay, this is a very difficult part. Why? What do you mean the entire day? I don't know what it means the entire day. Nechshavnu kitzoyim tivcha, we have considered like sheep to slaughter. Why is this pasuk? There's something I'm missing over here. Why this pasuk really fits into this? Okay, so this is a pasuk. This is the pasuk. This is the drasha we have over here. We're giving and Zion, and this is a very big topic. This is a topic in the kinois on Tisha B'Av. This is dealt with of the heroism of children not willing to die, not willing to be taken for averos. Okay, this is a very big topic of children, how they react, how they were moisa nefesh in times of shmad, the Holocaust. Okay, they're very very. Very moving and powerful accounts of children. Okay, in the Holocaust, approximately 1.5 million children were killed al kiddush Hashem, and every child has a story, and every story is a heart wrenching, tearjerker. Every single child. Okay, once spoke about in the Holocaust, you go to a museum of the sounds of the Holocaust. The sounds, what would be in the museum of the sounds of the Holocaust? They would play sounds barking. You would walk through the museum and you would hear dogs barking. Then you would hear the sound of the trains, of the cattle cars taking the Jews. You would hear the sounds schnell, of the Germans, schnell. The German soldiers, the Nazis screaming, schnell, schnell, schnell. There's a whole collection of sounds that are just horrifying. But there is no sound. This is not my comments. This is what I've read. I read about this. I read about Babi Yar. When I did research about Babi Yar, I came across this whole concept about the sounds of the Holocaust. There is no sound in the world that can be compared to the sound of children screaming as they're being murdered. Okay, when the Nazis, Yimach Shemam V'Zichram, took children and lined them up and shot them in front of their parents or in front of, and when they saw they're being killed, they were screaming. And people who heard those sounds of mass murder of children are damaged forever. To get those sounds out of your head, it's an impossible thing. It's the worst thing possible. Children of the Holocaust, he wrote a fabulous book. Henoch Teller. Henoch Teller, probably the best thing that he ever wrote. Who am I to say that? But I'm a big fan of Henoch Teller. He wrote a book, Children of the Holocaust. Okay, it's a nice, thick book. It's not a storybook. It's a historical record of each chapter is a different child. He goes through a whole number of children and he tells their story. Very powerful book. He knows how to write like none other, and the topic is a topic of not like none other, and it's quite a book. And here you're dealing over here with this story over here. I don't know why this has to be more to the story here, but Kol Hayom is the Yam. I don't know. Okay, I don't know. There's something more that we're missing. There's something more that we're missing as to why particularly this pasuk. There are so many pesukim in Tanakh that you can attribute, you can connect to the story of the 400 children. Okay, the way the Gemara presents it, it's not so clear. It seems to say there's a grand total of 400. There's another version, there was 300. 300, two ships. 300 boys, 300 girls. Is it the same story?
400
are
default
that Rameir is saying is there are two numbers. There are really two numbers that Chazal use as a code word for a guzma. And that is not only Guzma, but the most is either the letter Tav, because that's the last, that's the symbolic numbers. Two symbolic numbers that we have in Chazal, one is the letter Tav, one is the letter Shin. Tav is the last letter of the Aleph Beis, that typically means the most. But very, very often Chazal use the number 300 as a symbolic number, meaning the most possible. We once had a drasha, is that when Chazal talk about Ruchnius, They use the guzma, the symbolic number of 300, and when they talk about gashmius, they use the number 400. It works most of the time. This idea. For example, Esav. When Esav came to fight against Yaakov, how many men did he come with? 400 men. How many parakim were in the Masechta Avodah Zarah of Avraham Avinu? 400. What letter is on our tefillin? All the letters, you want to put a letter on the tefillin? The letter Shin. The letter Shin is Ruchnius. 300. The tefillin, Vrokal Amritzki, Shem Hashem Nikro Lecha. Okay, besides that, the Shin represents Shakai, but there's a letter Shin. Shin represents, it's like, you know, it's like a nuclear facility. Hazard, don't go near. Danger. The Shin means, this is the spitz of spirituality. It's the Shem Hashem. Shin. It's not for nothing that Hashem's name Shakai has a shin. All right, whatever. Over here, it's interesting. Over here, where the Gemara presents that there were 400, were there 400 boys and 400 girls for a total of 800, or were there a grand total of 400? Was there one ship? Were there two ships? This Gemara in Masechta Gittin seems to say there was a grand total of 400, not more than that. It was one ship, and on that one ship there were boys and girls, and the girls made the drasha, they jumped overboard, and the boys made the kal v'chaymer, and they jumped overboard. Okay, there are other stories, other Mamori Chazal, which are not exactly the same. Are they the same story? Is it a different story? I don't know. Right now we have in front of us this particular story, and this story is mentioned.
Different versions of these
agadot. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sometimes it's just they're different stories. They're similar stories, different eras, different times. Okay, I don't know. But the big question is what's the connection between the Kodesh HaKodashim, Titois stabbing the Kodesh HaKodashim, coming in the Kodesh HaKodashim, and the end of the Kina, the end of the Kina of the story, always bothered me. My Indian Shemitah Eitz La'asinai, why in the beginning of the Kina do we start at Zachor, Asher Oso, Tsar, Bifinim? Remember what the Tsar, the enemy, did inside the Kodesh HaKadosh. He took out his sword and he stabbed the Kodesh, the Paroiches of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and blood came out. At the end of the Kina, we mention the death of these 400 children. What's the connection? I don't know. I mean, only thing, you know, the only thing you get, just to say a little bit about it, is that in the Kodesh HaKodashim, what was there, it doesn't really make a sense what I'm saying, because in the Bayis Sheni, there was no Aron. And if there was no Aron, there were no Kiruvim. The Kiruvim, what do the Kiruvim look like? Chazal say Rashi and Chumash, is a tinoik and a tinoikes. The kruvim have the tsura of a boy and a girl, the tinoikos shel beis rabon, sitting on top of the oroin hakodesh. Titus comes inside to the kodesh hakodesh. We have to remember the bayis sheni, there was no oroin. It was just an empty room. It wasn't even a room. In the bayis sheni, this is a very, very important difference to appreciate the difference in the bayis rishon and the bayis sheni. In the bayis rishon, the kodesh hakodeshim was a real room. It was a cheder. It was a separate room. It had a lower ceiling, and it had walls, and it had a door, and there was a curtain on the door. In the bayis sheni, it was not a room. It was like you go to a wedding hall, and they put up temporary mechitzos to separate the chuppah area from where they're going to have the seuda. Sometimes they just have moving partitions. Sometimes they have partitions that are built into the ceiling, and they move along. In the bayis sheni, it was one big room, and they just put up a mechitza at the end of the room to separate this area we will designate as the Kodesh HaKodoshim, but it was not a separate room. You know what that gives you the impression? This structure is only temporary. This is not the real thing. If you go to a real, in your home, you have a separate room, a real home, you have a separate room, your bedroom, and there's a kitchen, and there's a dining room, and there's a living room, and there's a playroom, right? You have separate, we had a guest, someone came to the house a long time, they said to my mother, where's the playroom? The playroom? What do you think this is over here? A hotel? You have a separate room for everything. But when you don't have that luxury, you have just one big open area, and you put up a curtain. This area you designate as the bedroom. This area you designate, you put up a curtain, this is going to be the kitchen area. This area is going to be, your dining area. The bayis sheni was not a permanent structure. The Shekhinah did not return. It was not built where there was a real Kodesh HaKodoshim. It was just one big open temporary trailer. It was like a trailer. And in the back of the trailer, they put up a curtain. Oh, this will designate as the Kodesh HaKadoshim section, because the Shekhinah did not return. And there was no Oren HaKodesh. And there were no Kruvim. So it was just a designated area to make believe. Oh, remember the olden days when we had a Bayis Rishon and the Shekhinah was present? There was an Esh Min HaShemayim, and there were constant miracles. Then we had a Kodesh HaKadoshim. Now, we're just living in a world of make-believe. So we put up a mechitza in this area, a zecher lemikdash, what it was like to have a Kodesh HaKadoshim. But let's not get carried away, because what?
I can see the connection between the two things. Doshim Tiyu Ki Kadosh Ani. The Romans attacked
Right, so the Yeladim are the Kodesh HaKadoshim. They are the Kruvim. That's what I'm trying to say. I think of common, I'm the Kedusha of Klal Yisrael. What's inside the Kodesh HaKadoshim? The Oroin and the Kruvim that are resting on the Oroin. Okay, the Kruvim are even more Kodesh. Think about it. Today, no one would dare put a Siddur on top of a Chumash. Are you allowed to put a siddur on a chumash? The truth is, you are. You know why you are? Because
printed.
It doesn't matter. Printed, you're not allowed to. Still, even though,
there's
a leniency. Okay. I'm sorry, I didn't know that. But there's another reason why today we don't do it. Still, they're not going to give you shlishi for doing this. But because today our siddurim all have tehillim in the back. Today, ours, and also they have a chumash. They have all the parshios. Almost all of them have at least the parshios, the kriyas haTorah. It used to be 100 years ago. They did not print in the back of the siddur the parsha and the kriyas haTorah until sheni. Today, just about every single siddur that's published today, no one's going to publish a siddur that's not going to put the Kriyas HaTorah until Sheni in the back couple of pages, the Kriyas HaTorah for every single parasha. And Art School has quite a bit. It has things from Mamish, from it has Shir Hashirim, it has, and it has, again, every parasha, and has, and none of them has the Megillah, none of them, the Siddur have the Megillah, but they have Shir Hashirim, and they have anything from, in Nevi'im, they have all the Haftorahs. They have many of that on the Moab, from the Moadim. They have Nevi'im. What?
Pirkei
Avos. So every Siddur today, I mean, not every, but many, many Siddurim today have quite a nice chunk of Chumash, Nevi'im, Ksuvim, as you said, Pirkei Avos, there's a Mishnah. So there are poskim that say it's not the end of the world if you put even a Siddur on top of a Chumash, because the Siddur also has a Chumash inside. Now, it's obviously, it's not something that you do l'chatchila. You don't go do l'chatchila. That's not the custom. The custom is to be makbid. There's a certain protocol of what goes on top of what. But because, Baruch Hashem, the affluence of Klal Yisrael and the advancement of technology has allowed for this, it's interesting that things that years ago would have been considered to be mamish forbidden, unless you say in the Aruch HaShulchan it's mekel and it's printed, it's not, doesn't have the same severity because it's printed. There's room to be lenient. You know when it's really necessary to be lenient? If you're a packer, is that what it's called? In Yiddish, a person who puts away svarim and shul. Okay, it's, you put away svarim and shul. People are, unfortunately, they never went to kindergarten and they were never taught to put back a sefer after you finish using it. Terrible thing. And they leave it on the table and someone has to come and clean up their mess. They have to clean and put away the sefarim. So it's not always so easy that when you put away sefarim on the bookcase that you should take it to the bookshelf. You know, everything should be in the proper kavod, the proper order, where the siddur cannot be on top of a chumash. So this is a very important leniency that when it's not so easy, it's not the end of the world if you put a siddur on top of a chumash. But getting back to our discussion over here, I don't even know how we got into that, but getting over here is in the Beis HaMikdash, there was the Aroin, that's how we got to it. Is that on top of the Aroin with the Kruvim? How are you allowed to do that? How are you allowed to de-sanctify the disgrace? To put the Kruvim on top of the Aroin? The Aroin is the Aroin HaKodesh. Inside the Aroin is Tashmishei Kedusha. Inside the Aroin is the Luchos. The Haluchos Maasei Elokim Hema Luchos V'Shivrei Luchos Munochos Ba'Aroin. And then the Luchos Shniyos, and there's a Sefer Torah inside the Aroin. So the Aroin is Mamish Tashmishei Kedusha. So you want to cover it? Okay. But the cover has Kruvim? Kruvim, these are angelic figures.
Attached to the Aron?
Yes, they were miksha achas. So what, they're attached? It's not in the spirit.
It's the highest level of Kedusha there, because Hashem spoke
the Shekhinah, absolutely, Hashem spoke between the Kruvim. This is where the Shekhinah appeared. But still, halach is terla b'shamayimi. Halach is halacha. Today, no one would put on top of the Aron HaKodesh. Yeah, let's say you're carrying, you go in a base oval, they have misaskim.
You have the Kruvim were not on top of
they were attached. Mikshachas. Okay. And they spread their wings. Okay, it was on top. Mamish lot. Okay, but it's still mechubar. It's mechubar. So I'm asking you a question, which it's not really a question, but it's to bring out a point. How did Hashem instruct Klal Yisrael to create these angelic figures and have them rest mamish on top of the Aroin? Today, if there was not a pasuk to do this, and you had a room of Talmidei Chachamim, and we're going to have an Aron HaKodesh, and we want to beautify the Aron HaKodesh. Would a person today say that it's proper that on top of the Aron we're gonna make objects? First of all, you'll say it's Avodah Zarah. Okay, that's the first thing. It's Avodah Zarah. It's like the Egel. What are you making? And Chazal Taka say the Chazal. What is the chiluk between the Egel and the Kruvim? What's the chiluk? Why is the Egel the worst thing in the world and the Kruvim is Oli? No, the what? You have objects. It's not resting. Okay, I hear. You have to. It's a little bit different. In the Beis Avel, okay, you go to, there's an Aron HaKodesh, Misaskim. You have an Aron HaKodesh. would anyone go put on top of the Aron Kodesh something? It's not respectful. You don't go put Sidurim Paul Sidurim on top of the Aron. The Aron is Tashmishe Kedusha. Even the Bima. There are many people, there are some shuls, I know Rabbi Schmidman, they're very makbid there. The Gabbai is very makbid. Nothing goes on the Bima. The Bima is Tashmishe Kedusha. You don't go put on the Bima Svarim. You don't go put on the Bima Pushka. The Bima is Tashmishe Kedusha. Most shuls are not so makbid. Most shuls, I remember the olden days, back in the Chaim Berlin, this goes back when I was a little kid, I remember the Bima, Menachem, you remember? It was piled to the top Svarim. Hats, yeah? On the Bima? It was a very small but narrow base medish. The Bima was like mamish, a pillar of Svarim. Okay, today nothing. Today there's nothing on the Bima because today they have more room and it's on a stage. There's a wall around it and you have to walk up steps. So today there's nothing on the Bima. Some shuls are very makbid. They mamish la.
Maybe you're getting there, but the room were not a separate thing put on top.
Okay, so they give me answers. The part and parcel of the cover.
It's not even Tashmishe Kedusha, it's Kedusha Atzma.
Is it?
Yes.
I mean,
the
Shechina spoke to Moshe.
The Kedusha of the entire.
It's a chelik of the Aron, it's a cover.
Being put on it.
Okay, you're giving a very good answer. Rav Mordechai is giving a very good technical answer. But I think there's still a good question. I think the question still carries weight is, I don't think if we did not, we're brainwashed. From the time we're in kindergarten, oh, the Aron, the Kruvim, this, if you never knew about the Kruvim, and you would see it for the first time, you would be very surprised. First of all, why is the Kruvim?
The Gemara says that the Goyim, the nations, they made mockery
this,
of
this. Exactly,
they
exactly.
Made mockery of,
that's
so
the
they
proof. This what they do?
They said, this is what the Jews had.
Do a man and a woman looking at each other, embracing? What's going on? Right, right. And on top of the Aron?
Because they didn't understand that the Kedusha of the entire.
And on top of the Aron? On top of the.
That's what they said.
Yeah, so Yitaka see.
The Jews had an image. Images and stuff.
Right, so on top of the Aron, what's going on? Haloi Davar?
That was their perverted understanding of what the
and they're right.
Truth was. They're wrong. Because it was part and parcel of all one unit. Yeah.
Okay, but you're giving a technical answer, but obviously there's an answer. What is the answer? So Chazal, so first of all, what are the Kruvim? What are they? Are they angels? What are they? So Chazal say, a Tinoik and a Tinoikis. That's a Rashi and Chumash. This is Rashi and Chumash. It's a mashal. There are many halachim. So that you're already more advanced. You're saying more advanced things that it's the mashal of Hashem at mitzvah tans. A mitzvah, the chassidim is a big thing of a chos and kala. But the Rashi.
They were in. They faced away from each other.
When they look at each other. It was a miracle.
When the Klal Yisrael was together with Hashem, they faced each other. They embraced. Otherwise, they separated.
Right. You know,
why did Hashem speak to Moshe Rabbeinu from Beit HaKeruvim?
Okay, these are advanced. You're saying very advanced things. You're saying everything you're saying. I'm 100%. I'm with you. I'm with you. I'm on your team. Right. But these are advanced. Rashi and Chumash is very poshut. Tinoik v'tinoikas. What's my high? So what does it really represent? It represents innocence, purity. It represents. No, Chazal say the oilam is niskayim from shum the hevel, the breath of the tinoikos shel beis rabban. Ein oilam niskayim elam yishum the hevel tinoikos shel beis rabban. The pure breath that comes out of children learning Torah. The Aron is Torah. On top of the Aron are the kindlach, are the hevel tinoikos. Shel beis rabban. Okay, that's the many mahalchem chos and kala represents misamel Hashem and klal yishol, but a very posh pshat. That's another mahalch. I ain't part of the Torah. Memela, now we understand what the connection between titois zuchor asher osa tsar bifinim inside the Aron HaKodesh, inside the Kodesh Hakodashim. Unfortunately, the Bayis Sheni, there was nothing there. It was just an empty room. But what was there? What was meant to be there? What was meant to be there is the Torah. And then on top of the Torah are the Tinoikos Shel Beis Rabban. The Hevel Tinoikos Shel Beis Rabban. Zuchora she'osar tzar b'finim, he came into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, he stabbed the Paroiches, and the Kruvim are the children that he took on the ship to Rome, Likoloin. And those children, when they realize what's happening, they give up their lives, al kiddush Hashem. So it's one thing. Zuchor she'osar tzar b'finim, he defiled the Mokoim. He defiled the Torah. Now the Chazal actually say that it doesn't say that it's Taka says it says. I remember he took a Sefer Torah, and he spread it out in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and he did an Avera with his mother. He took his mother into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and he had
a Zoyna.
That was Omoin. I made him like Omoin the Bayis Rishon. In the Bayis Rishon, Omoin is a different story, right? Correct. Took a Zoyna. Okay, you have to be eyeing more into in the defilement. But what is in the Aron? The Kruvim. Those Kruvim are living Kruvim. They're the Tinoikos. Shod Mishraban. Those are the second part of the Kina. Those are the children. They are the living embodiment of the Kruvim, which he took with him on a ship to Rome, Likoloin, and they died al Kiddush Hashem. So it's really the children were living Kruvim. That's because of Rashi. What are the Kruvim? The Tinuk and the Tinukas. Here it begins. Maisa, Amar Avidim Mishmol, Vitem Ravam, Vitem Ravam, Vitem Maisa, Be'arba Meyos Yilodin, Viyilodois. These are the Kruvim. And Zachar She'osar Tzar Bifinim, he came into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, he defiled the Kedusha Samakim, and he took the Kruvim. He stole the Kruvim. He took them on a ship. And here's the story. And Oshiv, Yoshiv, and the Gemara quotes the Pasuk, Omar Hashem Yibosh Noshiv Oshiv Mimitzlus Yom. The Gemara makes a whole drasha. And then the Gemara ties it to this. Ki Olecho Hayragnu Kol Hayoim Nechshavnu Kitzoyin Tifcha. This is the story of Titois Horosha. Titois, right? Everyone goes to go. They go to Rome. They go to the Arch of Titus. The Arch of Titus, the depiction there. That's a whole story to itself. What exactly is depicted? That's a big Hanukkah story, right? The Arch of Titus, because there's the menorah. Depicted on the Arch of Titus is the menorah. Is that really the menorah? It's a very big debate. If the menorah that they have depicted on the Arch of Titus is in fact the menorah of the Beis HaMikdash.
I don't know, for 6 or 7 branches, that's the question.
No, that has an number of branches. That the Arch of Titus has 7 branches, that's correct. That's correct. The question is that really a true depiction of the menorah of the Beis HaMikdash? Chabad, I don't think, is very happy with that menorah. No, it's not a V. The Arch of Titus is a very big problem for Chabad. Chabad promotes Shitas, they claim, no one knows what the Rambam really holds. There's a drawing in the Rambam that the menorah is the V menorah. Chabad is heavily steeped in emunah that the proper tzura of the menorah is the V. I'm sure you all seen the Chabad menorah. The V menorah, a V menorah. And Rashi, there's no way to be machriya what Rashi holds. Rashi's depiction of the menorah is ein lehachriya, what Rashi holds of the Rambam. And the truth is, no one really knows what the Rambam holds, because we don't even know if the Rambam drew that picture. We don't know who drew that picture. Did the Rambam drew, and even if the Rambam did draw that picture, was the Rambam drawing the picture as a true depiction? Or maybe no, the Rambam was just presenting concepts. And Adrabi did not want to draw a true depiction because you're not allowed to. It's not so simple that you're not allowed to make a model of the Mikdash, a real life-size model. So some don't even want to make an accurate depiction because it's not necessarily the correct thing to do. So no one will, the end of the day is, no one really knows what the menorah looked like. We always grew up with the tradition that the menorah was round, right? That's the common. Like over here, this is not straight over here. This is straight level. It's not straight. So it's no, but at least round. But the Chabad, they're very into Rambam. They very much machshev Rambam, and the Rambam's depiction is V. So they've convinced themselves that the menorah is a V menorah, and the Arch of Titus is not in their favor, unless you want to say that the Arch of Titus is not the menorah of the Beis HaMikdash. It was a fancy candelabra they found somewhere. There are a lot of, you have lights. Look in this room. Look how many light fixtures you have in this room. Okay? In the Beis HaMikdash, they need light fixtures. It got dark in there. You need light. You have to have candelabras all over the place.
The gold was just off.
No one really knows. These are some of the big issues. There's a very problem, though, is that because if you really want to say this is the candelabra, why did it have seven branches? It should have only six or eight. You're not allowed to make a replica of a menorah of seven branches. So why then, if you're going to suggest that it was a candelabra for illumination and it was not the sacred menorah, why then did this candelabra happen to have seven branches?
It should... Person who sculptured that? He's an Amoritz.
We don't know. Everything about the Arch of Titus is a mystery. What exactly did he depict? There are more things. There are trumpets. There are a whole bunch of. If you look very, very carefully, there's how many books have been written about this? How much has been written about this? About deciphering all of the details of the Arch of Titus. Who's carrying it? Who are the people that are carrying? The people that look like they're about to collapse. Jews. Jews were taken as slaves to schlep these kalim all the way from Eretz Yisrael to Rome. And then there's also the problem, also is the bottom, the base. There's no legs. There are no legs on the menorah. There's a lot of Torah on this. And they've done research, and they know today that it was once painted. It was painted. They found chips of paint from 2,000 years ago. Today, it's due to the weather, all the paint has completely disappeared, but they're able to recreate what it really looked like when it was done originally through carbon dating and all this technology. It's fascinating. There's an enormous amount of material. If you go do Google, you'll see some amazing pictures on Google that and the pictures. It looks a lot better than it looks in real life. At any event, this is a very, very important story that we've learned over here on this page over here. And it's and the Medrash connects it to Ki Alecho Haragnu Kol Hayoim. It definitely needs a little bit more hesber of what this is, how this pasuk connects specifically to this, but that's what it is. Let's learn a little bit more on another Maimar Chazal. I'm not so sure we're gonna start the next Mizmor. They really deserve on Akdama, the next Mizmor. Let's do a little bit more Maimar Chazal today. Second line when it gets wide. Rimei Oimer. Okay, a new Maimar Chazal. Harei hu oimer, it says in the pasuk, v'yohafta, you shall love. Every day we say this. Ace. Hashem Elokecha b'chol levavicha u'v'chol nafshecha v'chol me'odecha. It says levavicha b'loshem rabim. How many hearts does a person have? How many hearts does a person have? Person have one heart, two hearts, three hearts. So it says over here, b'chol levav, two hearts. B'shnei yitzarecha, it doesn't refer to you, it refers to your two passions. B'yetzer toiv v'yetzera. Okay, the person shall love with his yetzer rahara. What does that mean? It's a very difficult chazal to understand what it means that a person should love Hashem with his yetzer hara. What does that mean exactly? So you're going to say that a person, he has a loves chocolate. Ah, I love chocolate. So It's a yetzer hara. Is it really a yetzer hara? Well, let's say worse. A person has a tendency to be nichshol negili arayis. That's a yetzer hara. Okay,
yetzer hara is an addiction, or is it an addiction is further?
It's what?
An addiction.
I don't know.
It can.
I don't know if that's the right term.
That's the extreme of a yetzer
hara. That's the damage. Addiction is the fallout.
You have no choice.
You get to a point where you're saying you're a muchrach. I don't know. Okay, this is too complicated. But it's a very difficult chazal. What it means, like, how do you that? You know, they say you should, you go and you mile it, and then the tzaytzais, you make a suda on Shabbos. You have delicious food on Shabbos. On Shabbos you have a cholent and you have kugel and you have candy. So Oh, that's serving Hashem with your Yetzer Hara. Excuse me? Yetzer, it's not. That's what you mean? That's what it means to say? It's very hard to understand what this means. Typically, you'll ask a person what it means. It means that a person likes to enjoy life. So just enjoy life in a Torah-dick way. So on Shabbos, you have good food, and you have Zmirois. So therefore, you're serving Hashem with your Yetzer Hara. Excuse me, is that really what it means? Why is enjoying yourself with good food called the Yetzer Hara? That's the Yetzer Toiv. That's not Ra. Food is good. It's natural to enjoy food. It's natural to enjoy yourself. So you channel your enjoyment of this world for Avodas Hashem. Why is that called? Is that called serving Hashem with your Yetzer Hara? I think that's a very. It's not the really what it means. You know, it's a nice thing you tell children is that you serve Hashem with Yetzer Hara. Is that no? When you fast sometimes, and sometimes you have a meal. And you enjoy the meal, and you say Birchas HaMazon with Kavana. It doesn't sound like that's really what it means. It sounds like sort of Kalman is saying it means this, so the Yetzirah means what you don't do. But that's you're avoiding conflict. Not to do an Aveira Sur Meira, you're not serving Hashem with the Yetzirah. It's you're avoiding. It's an avoidance. You're avoiding it. So I don't really know what it means. It's a That's why is that called the Yetzer Hara? Why is it the Yetzer Hara? Hashem put you in this world to have a good time. So just have a good time doing in the
best.
So why is that the Yetzer Hara? So you have the best food. Why is that called the Yetzer Hara? That's what the Olam says. The way you serve Hashem with the Yetzer Hara is you take Gashmias and you elevate it for Avodas Hashem. Okay, that's called the Yetzer Toiv. Why is that a fulfillment of b'chol levavcha, b'shnei yitzerecha, the Yetzer Hara? Enjoying good food, having a good time, is not the Yetzer Hara. That's not the Yetzer Hara. That's the Yetzer Toiv.
You want to stay away. How about a Yetzer Hara to make money? But then you
that's not the Yetzer Hara. Who doesn't want to make money?
No,
money's good.
Obsessed with making money.
Obsessed? That's a sickness. That's out of control. This requires deep thought. What exactly does it mean to serve Hashem with the Yetzer Hara? This is a very difficult. You can say all the simple interpretations. You can stop people on the street and they'll give you these things they've been taught in kindergarten, but that's not really what it means. It means something much deeper. But that's not serving. That's putting him in prison. A person is a taivad lu and avera. And you conquer the Yetzer Hara. Libi cholal bikirbi. David said, I killed it. I stabbed it. I don't have any Yetzer Hara. One of the Amoraim says, Rabbi Yochanan says, I stand outside the mikvah. Okay, try to do this today. You go straight to jail. I stand outside the mikvah. So when a woman comes out from the mikvah, she should look at me. And she should see a beautiful person so that when she's with her husband, she should be having the image of a beautiful person and have beautiful children. Okay, try to say that in court today. Yes, see what that will land you in court. Rabbi Yochanan was Kodesh Kodashim, and he was sincere. And they asked him, oh, aren't you afraid you're going to come in contact with Nashim? You're going in Nashim, you're going to be Nichshol and Aveira. He says, I killed my Yetzer Hara. To me, they're a piece of wood. Now, oh, so you're going to say today in our sick society that he had some illness, right? He's not. Chas v'sholim! Chas v'shalom. He was a healthy male, adult male, but he, in the spiritual world, he conquered his Yetzer Hara. So you've killed it. You've conquered it. You control it. That's not called serving Hashem with the Yetzer Hara. You got rid of it. You eliminate it. You avoid conflict.
It's a story about the rab that he used to take
on his shoulders.
There,
but like a piece of wood. Try that today. Go to a wedding today. Take a 20-year-old girl on your shoulders. I'll see you in solitary confinement. A danger to society. Okay? A danger to society. So what does it mean? I do not know what this means. This means something over here which is very, very difficult to explain what this means. That the Yetzer Hara, don't underestimate the evil. The Yetzer Hara is evil. It's Ra. people don't appreciate what Ra means. The people, Baruch Hashem, we live in a world where we try not to come in contact with evil. But there are a lot of evil people out there, and they have ideas that are very, very, very dangerous and very scary. When you see what Ra really is, and then every person has in himself a Yetzer Hara. You don't deal with Ra, Yetzer Hara. You don't deal with this. You just eliminate it. You avoid it. You don't want to serve Hashem with it. You don't invite the Yetzer Hara into your life. So what does it mean? I do not have a little further over here. Uvechol nafshecha ve'afilu hu noitel es nafshecha ve'cheinu omer this pasuk. This pasuk yolecho hiragnu kol yom is the fulfillment of uvechol nafshecha. Okay, next. Next, Maim Chazar B'Akiva. Rabbi Akiva says, Rabbi Akiva omer adaber bino oisav uveshvachav shol mishama v'choyolam. Rabbi Akiva says, I speak about the beauty and the praise of the Creator. Of the creative of Misha Omar Vehoyoholam Bifnei Kol Umois Oilam Shahare Umois Oilam Sholim is Sholimar Madoyrech. This is a very elaborate Rasha. Quotes Psukim, I'll just read very quickly. Madoydech Midoy Shokoch Yishvatanu Shokoch Atem Mesim Olav Vekach Atem Herog Molav. The Goyim over here, Bikiva here is giving a description, a general analysis of Jewish history. In Jewish history, the Goyim, they observe how the Jews are faithful and loyal to Hashem to the degree they give up their life. And they ask the Jews, why? What is it about Hashem that you have so much faith in Him that you will to give up your life? Shalom es yisholoymar, ma doideich midoid. Why is your beloved so special? Shekocha hishvatanu, which means that you have sworn to him allegiance to the nth degree of giving up your life. Shekach atem meisim olav v'chein atem nehereg molav shnemar alkein alamos ahavucha ahavucha admoves. Alamos means al, it's a contraction of two words, al moves, above death. You willing, even though literally it means youth, young women, but it means here means almaves. Uksiv ki olecha ragnu, and here's the reason why we call this medrash. And the other pasuk ki olecha ragnu kol yom, hareatem noyim, hareatem giborim, bovis arvu imanu. Give up your faith and join our ranks. V'yishol oymim lochem lu mosayla makinatem oiso. Do you recognize Hashem? Noymar lochem miksa shvachay. Will tell you some of Hashem's attributes. Doidi tzach ve'adoim dogul merivava. Okay, these are different expressions. He is tzach, he is smooth. Adoim, he is ruddy, he has a complexion of red. Dogul, he is raised high. Merivava, which literally means 10,000. Let's say, kevon shekach shavachay oim liyotshol nelchi imachem shnemer ono holach lidich hayofa ben Hashem ono fonach onichalich v'nishkam nakshon imach. Too bad for you. Ain lochem chelik boy ella doidi li vaniloi haroy bashoishanim. Okay, so we're not going to the psukim, but basically over here, the idea over here is this is a story of Jewish history. This is a cycle. It's a very powerful medrash, and it represents a cycle of Jewish history. In Jewish history, Jews have always been either the ghetto life, where they've been completely isolated, or they have been embraced by the goyim, as this as it says in the parasha, is hatzileni no miyad ochi miyad esaf. What is it? Next week. Vayishlach Yaakov malachim malesav ochiv. Aritzos seir. Not next week. Two weeks. Well, 2 weeks. Next week is vayetze. So when Yaakov came to confront Esav, Hatzileni no miyad ochi miyad Esav. So this is a classic Maimer Chazal, that in Golus, when we are confronted by Esav, there are two ways they try to destroy us. They either try to destroy us with friendship, miyad ochi. Miyad ochi is assimilation. And unfortunately, America is the poster child for this mahalich. In America, intermarriage is up to 75% at least. How many Jews have been lost to intermarriage in America? Come to America, and there's no limitation, and you can integrate into society. And being that the Jews, ki atem ha'amadmi kol ha'amim, in America there are 320 million Americans, probably a lot more with all the illegal immigrants. There are probably a lot more, and none of them share our values, and the number of Jews are a teeny, teeny fraction, and it's inevitable that when we intermingle with them, and they are our host, and we live off their land, we are going to be affected by them, and that causes us to be damaged spiritually. They embrace us, miyad achi, and when it's miyad achi, unfortunately, it rubs off on us. And then there's miyad esav, when they outright want to kill us. And then we're forced to go into a ghetto, and we're forced to live a life of seclusion, and they try to starve us from the outside. So these are the two techniques. And these two techniques correspond to what it says here in this Medrash. This Medrash says that it starts off, the Goyim, they hate us. So what do they want to do to us? They want to kill us. They want to kill us. So when they want to kill us, we go into a ghetto. They round us up, and they separate us, and they put us in a ghetto, and we live a life of complete separation. Okay, in Poland, the Shtetloch, the Jews lived with themselves. They were completely isolated to the degree they didn't even speak the language of the people. Mm-hmm. They were completely isolated. And the Goyim, that all was a response. And then the Goyim say to us, what are you doing? Why do you live like this? Why do you isolate yourself? Why do you separate yourself from the entire world and live in a ghetto and serve your God? Why don't you come out into the big wide world, enjoy all of the pleasures that the world has to offer, come out of the ghetto, leave the ghetto? So we say to the Goyim, you have no hasag of the beauty of the values, the morals that we have. And so the Goyim are very intrigued, so tell us about it, tell us, let us understand a little bit about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because in fact you're right, we're very depressed. And the secular world is struggles with meaning, that's purpose.
That's
right.
That's the story there.
Part of the Akdamas, is right. So they say, tell us. So the Jews reveal miktsas. They reveal a small amount of what it's like to be a Jew. And then the Goyim are very enamored. Wow. The Jews, you really are taka very special. Why don't you come join us? Let us also be part of this. So I'm suggesting that's what's really going on when the Goyim open up the ghettos. Napoleon, he was very, very big in opening up. He opened up the ghettos. He integrated, gave Jews full rights, everything. And it really changed the world. Jews were integrated very much. I'm trying to suggest that deep, deep down, it's because of this Medrash. What's going on in Shemayim is because it's the second part of this Medrash that... So let us also have a chelik in this beautiful religion. By letting the Jews out into the world, it will rub off on us. And then we go out into the world, and then there's a new conflict, and we say to them, you have no chelik in this. Don't even try. Don't think for one moment that you have any connection to this whatsoever. Let's review the steps. I think this Medrash is a very fascinating conversation, and I'm trying to suggest that this is really the story of world history, the relationship between the Jews and the Goyim, in all the generations where we find this cycle of the Goyim trying to put us in a ghetto and then they take us out of the ghetto. What are they really trying to do? Well, this story sheds light on the subconscious. The Freudian thinking of the Goyim in what they're doing. They may say they're doing it for other reasons, but deep, deep down inside their neshamas, there's something else going on. Again, the steps are, we live apart. Betach, am Marmayevsky, am levadad yishkoin, am levadad yishkoin. And the goyim, and the reason why we live alone, the reason why we live alone is not only because we want to live alone, but because Esav hates us, they force us to be in am levadad yishkoin. And the goyim, they don't understand. Why don't you just give up your religion and join us? Why do we have to persecute you? And why do we have to go and isolate you because you're so different and you don't want to have anything to do with us and we isolate you? Why? Why don't you just give up your religion and join the big picture, join the world? And then Klal Yisrael, they say to Goyim in different ways in history, because you don't, they let us tell you a little bit about Hashem. Dodi tzach v'odoim, dogul merivava. They reveal to the Goyim certain traits of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the world is such a depressed, sad, immoral society. And they look at the Jews and they see how successful they are. It's mind-boggling. It's like, really, it's mind-boggling. You know, it's go to Lakewood. It's I mean, there are a lot of problems in Lakewood. I'm not telling you Lakewood is Gan Eden. Certainly not. There are a lot of problems. But, you know, you can go into a school and no one's going to kill you. And you don't need to have metal detectors. And they're relatively speaking, inside the building, there are no drugs inside the building itself. I mean, I pass by every day Edward Morrow. Every day I pass by Edward R. Morrow. Edward R. Morrow is not such a bad school. Not such a bad school. I know people in R. Relatively speaking, I have. I know in R. Yitzhak, there's a guy there who went to Edward R. Morrow not that long ago, high school. He told me the whole rundown of the school, goes on in the school, all the politics. Recently, he told me everything. I was fascinated because I passed by the building every single day. I always wonder, all these kids. But
I call them the future rocket scientists of America. Meanwhile, they're studying Goldilocks and the Three Bears.
Okay, you see what goes on there. They're always lining them up like sheep. They're lining them up. And they're having their metal detectors, and they have to have their smartphones out to make sure they've been vaccinated, and there's this, and there's this, and it's like what's going on over here? And like, there's police, and there's this, and there's this, and this. So you go to yeshiva, you just act, behave normal. There's a certain, when you live a Torah life, it's just, there's a certain lichtigkeit. I'm not saying everything is perfect. Obviously, we all know the newspapers are telling you all the problems that are going on in the yeshivas. But obviously, there's something very special. And the goyim, when they go in, when we isolate ourselves and they persecute us, and then they say, what's it about you people? So we say to them, or they on their own figure out, Dodi tzach v'odoim, dogul merivava. And then they say, you know what? Maybe we're doing this. They have something to offer. Let them come into our schools. Let them integrate with us. So here's the chiddush. The reason why they want us to integrate, it's not because they're trying to destroy us. Miyad ochi. Miyad ochi. They're jealous. They want a little bit of this also. Subconsciously, you're doing something right. Maybe you can teach us that we can have this also. And then that's very, very bad, because then when we do integrate, we spit in their face and we say to them, sorry, buddy, he's not your God. Dodi li va'ani loy. You'll never have this. And that's then, really? Dodi, leave it, then get out. Go back into your ghetto. History has always gone through this cycle. Jews been part of society. And then the goyim say, get out. Expulsions, get out. And then after, so we go into isolation, we get out of their country, go to a new country, go into isolation. And then comes along Napoleon. Freedom, come, integrate. And we come back out into society and we integrate with them. And then they look and they say, Nachmal, the cycle continues. Get out of here. Get lost. What's going on over here? Why in Jewish history have we always gone through these cycles? This is a clear cycle of Jewish history. Isolation, integration, isolation, integration. And every time there's going to be integration, then there's persecution. We go into isolation. And then freedom comes. We go back out. So this medrash is telling you, because there's a conversation going on subconsciously between the neshama of Klal Yisrael and the Umos HaOlam. And that is, what is it about you people? What is it about you people that you isolate yourselves and you're so different? What? So we say, then we show them, you know, we have a very special relationship. And at some point in time, they come to realize that we do. Dodi tzach v'yadayim dagol merivava. And they say, you know what? Maybe we should try this also. And that's the next pasuk. And the next pasuk is, what's the next pasuk? The next pasuk is, Dodi tzach v'yadayim Ono holach dodech hayofa banashim. Ono fono dodech univakshenu imach. Napoleon, come. Come outside the ghetto. Come teach us. Integrate with us so we can rub off on us some of your values and we should also have a good life. And then we go out into society. We take all the benefits. But at the end of the day, we say to them, buddy, get lost. Dodi li v'ani loy. You have no chelik in this. And then when they realize that they have no chelik in this, they say, get back into your ghetto. Go back into your cage. This is a cycle. Three psukim in this. There are really four psukim. The first pasuk is...
They tried it and they got Christmas.
They first say to us, Madodech midoid. Madodech midoid. Hatshakocha hishpatan. What's so special? So we tell them, Dodi tzach v'yadayim, dagol merivava. So then they say to us, okay, let us also try. Univak shenu imach. And then we say back to them, sorry buddy, you have no chelik in this, get lost. This is the cycle of ghetto life, freedom, persecution, and we go back into the ghetto. The story of Jewish history. It's a continuous cycle until Mashiach will come. Alright, we're going to stop it. Tomorrow we're going to begin a new mizmar. A mizmar about the Melech HaMashiach. It's a beautiful mizmar, it's a short mizmar. And there are different and very, some really beautiful things in the next mizmar. Stay tuned, take a short break, and then we're going to learn about Vayetar Hashem Loi. Loi v'loi lo. Hashem answered the tefillah of Yitzchak, not of Rivka, because Yitzchak was a tzaddik ben tzaddik, whereas Rivka was tzaddik ben rasha, the birth of Yaakov. Okay, we'll talk about that after our break.